great song. But it's a good way to kick off Triple Play Thursday. Triple Play Thursday, yeah, man. And that, of course, is the Stones. Todd requested some Stones, so we got a triple play of the Stones, so Triple Play Thursday. He's turning 49 today. Happy birthday, Todd. And going to enjoy the triple play of the Rolling Stones. Todd, 49 today. Happy birthday. And Triple Play Thursday, if you want to get your requests in, you choose an artist, three songs by the artist, and then you control three of the music bumps that we play coming back from commercials. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Okay, we are going to talk about, movie endings. Great movie endings, memorable ones, maybe terrible endings. We got a list here of some great endings and some ambiguous ones as well. And we want to get your thoughts on that. We got texts already coming in. If you want to call and talk to us on the air about movie endings, bad, good, memorable, ambiguous, 312-981-7200, talk and text, 312-981-7200. Now, there's an essay that explains what makes some movie endings satisfying. Here's what it says. The final shots of a movie are often the images most likely to linger with us after the film ends. While a good ending can reinforce the major themes in a film or leave us with an unexpected new perspective, a bad ending can come close to ruining a film, leaving us unsatisfied when the credits start to roll. But what makes a movie ending effective or unsatisfying? In the video essay, How to End a Movie, YouTube user Now You See It explores a range of final classic scenes explaining why some work and while others don't. Using Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho and its unpopular 1998 remake as a case study, the video explains how subtle differences in the endings of the two films left viewers impressed with the original and disappointed in the remake. Then, looking at the oft-used ending devices, characters riding off into the sunset or walking away into a crowd, doors closing, and so on, the video shows how the same ending can be effective in one film and profoundly disappointing in another. So those are some of the reasons why. Now, I might add that the remake of Psycho just sucks. And it's not just a bad ending. It's a bad beginning, and it's a bad middle. And it is, without question, one of the worst ideas in the history of movies. And why Gus Van Sant thought it would be a good idea to do a almost frame-by-frame remake of Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, why that he thought that was a good idea is one of the eternal mysteries of film. And Gus Van Sant is no slouch. He's a terrific filmmaker. He's made a couple of turkeys here and there. But this is a guy who you wouldn't expect to do something as stupid as to try and do a remake, a virtual frame-by-frame remake of Psycho. It's not really frame-by-frame. There's some changes here and there. There's some stupid changes. Of course it's a stupid change. You're going to change Psycho? Yeah, I got an idea. I can make Psycho better. What?
Well, then he added that weird scene.
Which weird scene? Like the inside his head?
No, the one where he's looking in the peephole, but he's doing something else.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's the thing. They add the masturbation scene in the movie. And, if you watch Hitchcock's version of Psycho, which, as far as I'm concerned, is the only version, you know, you kind of assume that that's what he's doing anyway. You don't need to hear it or anything. So stupid. All right, we got a break. Great endings, bad endings, your favorite movie endings, 312-981-7200. News is coming up next. Todd, man, Todd's got good taste. This is one of my very favorite Stone songs. Triple Play Thursday, man. Triple Play Thursday. Todd's first one in for Triple Play Thursday on his birthday, 49 today. Happy birthday, Todd. Picked Sway by the Stones. Moonlight Mile was his first choice. Man, Todd, good. Todd, you should call in every Thursday for Triple Play Thursday. Jams. 312-981-7200. Talk and text. You can text in your Triple Play Thursday request and also your favorite or least favorite movie ending. 312-981-7200. That's what we're talking about. Let me poll my friends here that are on the show as well. Dan, do you have a favorite movie ending? Is there something that popped out when you
Mine would be Inception, probably my favorite movie-going experience ever, if not a very long time. I remember my friends, Adrian and Hazel, had seen the movie, and I had texted them saying, hey, do you guys want to see it again? They're like, no, we'll see it again. I'm like, really? Is it that good? And they're like, oh, yes. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And then just that spinning top and then the fade to black and the theater, just there was just this audible gasp.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing.
It's funny that you had an experience seeing that movie with someone who had seen it, because I went to the second critic screening of it. They had screened it for the critics once already. And of course, Eric, being the Christopher Nolan lunatic that he is, he had already seen it. And he specifically came and sat next to me. Because, I mean, you know how anti-Batman Nolan I am. Okay. Right. I'm pro-Nolan. Every other Nolan movie I like, I really do. And some I love. I mean, Interstellar is one of my favorite movies. Inception is one of my favorite movies. And again, the one-word titles that start with I-N,
right?
Because Insomnia is also great. So he's sitting next to me, and Colin had seen it already too. And they both, and I was like, oh, well, you both had seen it. Now, I wasn't surprised by Eric's second viewing of it. You know, the guy liked Dark Knight Rises. So, that same thing, it happened at the end. Like when it cuts to black at the end, I went, ooh. Like, I verbally went, oh, and then Eric just went and started applauding. and you know how much I love that movie, Dan, and I really do. The previous host of this shift did not, and you guys had some passionate discussions about Inception,
yeah.
You and Bill, right?
Yeah. He's just like, what? No, at this. And I'm like, no, you got to understand it's this and this. And
I love Inception. It's great. And that is one of the best endings ever. Now, how many, Vic, have you seen Inception?
Yeah, that was an incredible movie. I saw it in the theater. That's with DiCaprio, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, DiCaprio, Ellen Page, Marianne Cotillard, Tom Hardy.
I thought it was pretty profound. I mean, I had never seen anything like that before.
Oh, it's such a great movie.
You know, layered and layered on layers.
It's so good. And Esmeralda, what about you? Have you seen Inception?
I've seen it, but I couldn't tell you how it ends. Everything goes their way, doesn't it?
No.
Yeah, I don't remember. Everything starts blowing up or something.
Well, there's a lot of that for the entire movie, actually.
Like their little worlds that they were making for the dude.
Yeah, well, kind
on the
of.
Plane.
Kind of. The very end of what happens is DiCaprio's character has been away from home for a very, very long time.
Right.
And he hasn't seen his kids. He's not seen his kids. He's been away from home.
Oh.
And at the very end of the movie, and you know, early in the movie, each character makes themselves a token, which is something that they have to carry with them that reminds them whether they are in the real world or in the dream world. Okay? And everybody has to make one and have one. And so DiCaprio's is a top, a spinning top, like a little silver spinning top. And when he spins it and it wobbles and falls, that means he's in the real world and not the dream world. If it just continues to spin, then he's in a dream. And this is like a test to see whether or not you are in a dream.
Because
they go dream within a dream within a dream. I mean, a lot of the movie, it's not a very easy movie to explain.
He's the one with the wife that keeps following him around.
Yes, that's his subconscious. His wife represents his subconscious. And so Marianne Cotillard. So at the very end of the movie, he finally, you know, after he pulls off this last heist, this Inception heist, and it is a heist movie for all intents and purposes, it's a damn heist movie. They assemble a team, you know, like in your Ocean's movies, and they do a heist. Instead of stealing money, they're stealing stuff from people's brains, or in this case, putting something inside, planting a thought. So anyway, at the very end of the movie, he gets home. You know, he has promised if he pulls this off, he will go home. He'll be able to go home. So he goes home and he walks in. And he looks, and you've seen this room in flashbacks, that like his home. Michael Caine is there. He walks in, and he looks outside, and he sees his two kids. Now, for the entire movie, whenever they have this image of him looking at his kids, right, Dan? You never see the kids' faces.
Right.
You never, ever see the kids' faces. When he's dreaming about it or thinking about it or having a flashback about his kids, you never see their faces. They're outside of the house playing together. And that's the only image you ever see of the kids. Is that you never see their faces. Now, at the end of the movie, when he walks in, he looks back and you see the kids. It's the same shot. But then slowly, the kids turn around and you see their faces. He puts the top down and spins it. to see if he's in the real world or not. He walks away from the top as it's spinning. Doesn't even one of the most important things though, Dan, I think, is him not even looking at the top.
Right.
You know, like he doesn't even look to see if it wobbles or falls or stays. He just spins the top, he sees his kids, he walks over to his kids. As he's walking away, the camera focuses in on the top that is spinning, spinning, and spinning, and then it cuts to black. Okay.
And you never know if it falls over or not.
You never know if it falls over or not, but a millisecond before Nolan cuts to black, it wobbles a little. Okay? So two things. One, you never see the kid's face when it's a fantasy or a dream sequence or a flashback in the movie. At the end, you see the kids' faces, and right before Nolan cuts to black, there is a small little wobble. So he's in the real world.
Now I'm totally going to have to come back and watch that and see how tiny this wobble actually is.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Only Virgilio would notice it.
No. But people who, you know, people notice this. I'm telling you. And Dan, you did. I mean,
I did notice the wobble.
And I mean, I can't even explain to you the magnificent timing that blackout has. Like, it's right at that. I mean, it's literally a millisecond. It starts to wobble. Boom! It cuts to black. And I was like,
what if they looked at it and were like, oh, we're going to need to extend that fade out because you actually caught some of that wobble. And he's like, no, wait.
Oh, well,
leave that.
Well, no, I'm pretty sure probably the way that Nolan writes and the way that he directs, I'm pretty sure that was in his head from the beginning of this first script that he wrote.
Okay.
That was a decision that he made. But one of the reasons why I love talking about this stuff is, in fact, I hope a lot of people go back and watch some of these movies again, you know, because Inception has and then there's that great thing in Inception where you can always tell when DiCaprio is in a dream or not in a dream, because in his dreams, he's wearing his wedding ring. And this is not acknowledged. They don't say it. But whenever, if you're confused about what dream he's in, whether he's in a dream or if he's in reality, look for the wedding ring.
Right.
And if DiCaprio has the wedding ring on, he's in a dream.
And there are men. With that in mind, you might gain insight into what Christopher Nolan believes it to be if you watch his hands in that final scene as well.
So it's so good, man.
Yep.
It's so good. And it's on this list of best endings of any movies and the ambiguous ending of any movie, because it is ambiguous. But I don't think it's ambiguous. I think he's home. He's home. He's back with his kids. It would be really unsatisfying if it weren't. Do you know what I mean? You sit there, because that movie's 2 hours and 40 minutes long. And if it would have ended like, yeah, no, he's still in the dream, you'd be like, come on!
But maybe because he wants to be.
Well, that's the other thing, and that's why it's such a key moment when he doesn't look at the top. Do you know what I mean? Okay, if you want to be ambiguous about it, if Nolan wants you to think it's ambiguous, if you, in fact, think that he's still in a dream, it doesn't matter because he's happy now.
Right.
He doesn't care, because he spends a good portion of the movie spinning the top with a gun ready to blow his brains out in the movie. Because there are two scenes in the movie when he's going to kill himself, or at least kill himself inside a dream, if he's stuck. And the fact that he doesn't care about it, that's a really important moment in the end of that movie. Really important moment that he doesn't look whether the top falls or not. So, it's such a great movie, man. I want to go home and watch Inception again for the 900th time. Okay, we got a bunch of texts coming in. What are your favorite movie endings, ambiguous movie endings, that you could, interpret in different ways, just like Inception? And so, yeah. Sister Rose, I'm trying to score. Todd is an all-star, man. Oh, man. Triple Play Thursday, three flawless songs requested by Todd by the Stone, Sister Morphine. Boy, this is a jam. It's Triple Play Thursday, yeah! That means you can text in your choices for an artist in three songs, and three of those songs will be played as our bumps this morning. 312-981-7200. Also, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking about movies that you love the endings of. Great endings on movies, bad endings, too. Disappointing endings, or ambiguous endings. We were just discussing the ending of Inception, which, you know, you can probably interpret in 15,000 different ways. So we got more of those. We got texts coming in at 312-981-7200 and more. We got Rich. Trucker Rich is on the line. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Nick.
Hey.
Great show. The first thing I thought of when you were talking about this subject was the ending to Furious 7.
Yeah.
With, the montage, the little bit on the beach, and then when Vin Diesel's character, was driving away, and then the Paul Walker character drove up. you know, and he was saying the ending.
Yeah.
It sounded more like a eulogy.
Well, it was.
Every one of them wanted to say
that
didn't get a chance.
Well,
you know?
It was. I mean, they put that ending on there, you know, obviously for people who remember, Paul Walker died about three quarters of the way through the filming of the last Fast and Furious movie, Furious 7, and obviously that's a huge impact that his loss makes on that movie. And they did add that at the end. And, I thought it was great. I mean, I love those movies. Those movies are silly and they're stupid, and I love them. But I really didn't expect to well up at the end of a Fast and Furious movie, but I did. Like, during that last bit, man. I mean, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
I did the same thing, and it's like they just all said, "This is what we're going to do."
Yeah.
You know, and another thing that I noticed is the Paul Walker character. That was the only time he'd ever driven a white car.
Mm.
All the other cars were blue or orange or red, you know, but that was the white car, and it's like, it was just perfect. You know, it wasn't an ending of a movie; it was saying farewell to a friend.
It was.
You know?
That's exactly what it was, and that's why it was so moving. All right, Rich, thanks, man. Be careful out there, buddy. Yep. All right, take care.
Okay, take care, bye.
Trucker Rich out there driving around, kind of rainy night, so be careful out there if you're driving. Yeah, I did not expect to get the sniffles during a Fast and Furious movie. You know, I mean, what the hell, man? Now, what was the song? The song was by was it Wiz Khalifa? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I forget who sings the actual song part, but it was Khalifa.
Beautiful, man. Forget it. You know, I wanted to see cars fly through windows and flip and stuff, and I wanted to see The Rock blow stuff up with his arm, you know, and I did. But then I didn't expect to, like, walk out of the movie going, I didn't expect that at all. So, all right. Nick, I believe that there's only one statement, 312 area code says that for this type of one of the greatest movie endings of all time, all you have to say is what's in the box, huh? Seven. See, now, Dan, you and I have a different interpretation of the final moments in Seven.
We do, yes.
I go negative and you go positive.
Correct.
On the very end of that movie. I think it's a tragic ending and you think that it's a hopeful ending.
Right.
So you got to love that about movies, man. You guys remember the ending of Seven? Vic, have you seen Seven?
Wait, how is it hopeful?
I'm struggling to think about
it. How is it hopeful? The last part. No, I'm not talking about the part where, you know, he blows Kevin Spacey away because Gwyneth's head is in the box.
Right.
I'm talking about what happens after that. How Somerset, played by Morgan Freeman, in what I think, and I know you're probably going to say Red, but my favorite Morgan Freeman performance of all time is Seven. I think he's absolutely amazing in that movie. And I find the character to be absolutely heartbreaking. And I find the ending heartbreaking because he had 7 days to retirement at the beginning of the film. And at the end, after, you know, Brad Pitt is hauled away for blowing Kevin Spacey's head off, he says to Lee Ermey that he'll be around. And then it ends with a quote by
Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah, with Hemingway. He says Hemingway once said this. And I look at that sadly. I look like this is a tragedy for Somerset. And then, but Dan, you look at that quote in Somerset as a positive, like it's hopeful for him.
Right. The last line is, Hemingway once said, "The world is a fine place and worth fighting for." I agree with the second part.
Right.
And I view it as hopeful because it flashes back to a scene they had in the bar about an hour prior and about how Somerset was retiring and Brad Pitt challenged him and said, you know, Somerset's like, "The world is an awful place and I'm done with it and I want no part of it." And Brad Pitt's saying, you're like, "You are saying these things because you want them to be true, not because they are true. And
right.
You're giving up and that's not right. And I'm never going to give up. I'm not going to give up."
Right.
And in the end, he didn't.
Right. That's absolutely legitimate the way that you look at it. But I just look at it as really sad. Like, he wanted out and the world sucks, but he'll stay. He's got no other thing. He's got nothing else to do. And, but I just, you know, I mean, that movie, jeez. Man.
And to your point, yours is the one that everybody, like Freeman wanted and Fincher wanted. Like, they wanted to end the movie with, you know, the John C. McGinley in the helicopter, you know, talking about it. And they wanted to fade to black there. And the studio made them tack on that last part.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let me mention Risky Business then really quickly, because that's what they did. That's what Warner Brothers did, or I should say Geffen. the Deaf and Company did when Paul Brickman had his original ending of Risky Business. And it's here's the thing. I didn't know that there was a different ending to Risky Business. All the years that I had watched Risky Business, I didn't know there was a different ending until maybe 15 years after the movie had been released. And I, you know, was loving the movie for 15-some years and loving it and thinking it's perfect. Then I find out that there is an ending. And when I don't want to give the ending away because I want people to come out Tuesday to see it at my screening, and we'll show the original director's cut. But the ending that that Paul Brickman did is a little darker, and it's much more bitter than what you get now. But the studio said you got to add something. You got to add like some lightness, almost exactly what Fincher had to do. So he added that Hemingway quote at the end. Whereas this one, they add a little bit of, like, at the very end, they add something to get laughs at the end of the movie, to try and get a laugh at the end of the film. Because Risky Business ends on a very, very sour and dark note, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I think the movie ends on a tragic note, quite frankly, and a very cynical one, and a note that's not just about the main character, but about the decade in which that movie existed. And you know, the world of business, the world of being an adult, what it really means to be an adult. And it's bitter and it's sour and it's sad. And I've always felt that the ending was really sad. So I never understood why Brickman was so upset, because I always looked at the ending of Risky Business as a very sad and bitter ending. Always. From the moment I saw the movie when I was 18. One of the reasons I was so impacted by it was because when it ended, I was like, what the hell? You know, when you walk into a movie thinking you're going to see Porky's 4 and you see this, you know, transcendent, really incredibly moving and bitter film, like, wait a minute, because my mind was blown when I saw Risky Business. I'm not kidding. It had a profound effect on me. So I really thought that the end, and I still think that the ending on the commercial version of the film is terrific, and it's dark. Now, granted, his version, his ending, Brickman's original ending that he showed to Geffen, and they said, no, you got to change it, is briefer. It doesn't have the sort of throwback joke that is in the ending now. His ending cuts quicker, and it has the final line is different. And I won't give it away, but the final line is indeed sadder. And there is a moment between Lana and Joel at the end of the movie that is not in the regular cut, and it's this moment where they embrace, and it's a beautiful, beautiful moment. And I don't know how one of my ex-girlfriends found this on eBay for me, but I have a lobby card, and it's framed, and it's in my living room, and it's a lobby. Now, lobby cards are like, you know, they're like they would go up in the, you know, back when they had lobbies in movie theaters, and they would put up 8x10s and lobby cards and posters and stuff, and it would be different scenes from the movie captured, and on the lobby card would be an oversized cardboard color photo from the movie, a still from the movie, with the credits and the logo and stuff all printed on it. So I don't know how my ex found this, but she found it. I think she found it on eBay, and it's a lobby card of them embracing from the director's cut of the ending. So it doesn't exist in the movie. And so whenever people have seen this thing, because I've had this thing for 15, 20 years, this lobby card, people go, wait a minute, that's not in the movie. And I'm like, no, that's in the director's cut of the ending. And I have it right in my living room. It's framed right in my living room. It's one of my favorite things. So anyway, but yeah, that just like Fincher, they made him add, so let's make it a little bit happier. But it's still a very sad ending. So, and you can see it Tuesday night, May 3rd. At the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont, you'll see the regular ending and the director's ending of Risky Business, which is a masterpiece. All right, we got a break here. We got the news coming up, and then more. Your favorite, worst, best, most ambiguous endings of movies of all time. Yeah. 224 area code for Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. Requested Local H. And that was Eddie Vedder. Local H. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How you doing, everybody? We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. 6 o'clock, the great Steve Cochran with your morning drive. We're talking about movie endings. The best, the worst, the most ambiguous, the ones that you remember the most. 312-981-7200 for your movie endings. Brian, here's a shocker. Brian sends in a text. The quintessential movie ending for me is from Gymkhana. It is a culmination of goodness in all directions, including surviving the game, reuniting with a loved one, defeating the nemesis, and getting the girl. Would one expect anything less from a Kurt Thomas role? Brian is the one-man army of Gymkhana, who, whenever we talk about anything, somehow he will text in or call or something and bring up Gymkhana. So,
I mean, we shouldn't forget.
Yeah, you can't. Can't forget Gymkhana. Last year celebrated the 30th anniversary of Gymkhana. So there you go. All right. What about Vic? You have a movie ending that you thought of?
Okay. And I'm not an expert on movies, so I preface this with that. But two movies I saw recently that just blew my mind, and this may be more the crux than the ending, but Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, man.
When that just went off the rails.
Man.
And I looked at Jeannie. I turned to my left, and we both had the same look on our face when that thing went.
Here's the other thing.
The beginning of that movie, man, from the first.
Oh, it's great.
The writings, I was like, I leaned over and said, I love this.
Oh, the dialogue is great. I don't think
I'll ever watch it again, though.
No,
it was too disturbing.
And here's the other really disturbing thing, Vic. I don't know if you remember the guy who gets split up.
Yeah.
Who gets basically split up the middle.
You don't know if I remember.
Yeah. Well, do you remember his name? Do you remember his name?
No.
It's Nick.
Oh, okay.
So I'm watching the movie and they're screaming, "No, Nick, Nick." And then that happens and I'm like, "Well, all right, thanks."
So, such a messed up scene.
It's insane, man. All right, what was the other one that you said the ending?
The other one that, again, might not be considered the ending, but a moment where I went, what? Yeah. Was 10 Cloverfield.
Oh, you mean at the, 10 Cloverfield Lane. Don't give it away.
Okay, right. Thank
but,
you.
But you're talking about the last, like, 5 minutes of the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, man.
Yeah.
Really?
That, you know, I want to mention this. My dad has not stopped talking about that damn movie since we saw it, like, a month and a half ago, whenever it came out. My dad, at Jewel, will stop people and go, "You got to see this movie with John Glover." John Glover. John Glover? Where did that come from?
Does he
John
say that?
Goodman. John. My dad has no idea who John Glover is, yeah. Who is an actor, by the way. He is an actor and a good one. But anyway, John Goodman. You got to see this movie with John Goodman. Oh, man. My dad loved that movie.
You know, there's been movies that are similar to that where somebody's, you know, being held captive. But they did it, I thought, in a way that was, and again, I'm not an expert on movies, but as a movie goer, I thought it was kind of original the way they did it and carried me through it.
I agree with you 100%. It's a terrific movie. Terrific movie. All right, Esmeralda, do you have a movie ending that always gets you?
I couldn't think of any from too far back, but when I saw Goodnight Mommy.
Goodnight Mommy.
That one literally I understood that man that you said that kept saying hell no, because I throughout the whole thing and even at the end I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It was no.
For those of you who don't remember, the second time I saw Goodnight Mommy in the theater, and that shows you how twisted I am. I've seen that movie more than once. There was a group of people sitting across the aisle from me, and there was a guy who, when something like crazy or intense or twisted would happen in the movie, he would just go, "Oh, hell no!"
But it's very much warranted.
Oh no, absolutely! And he said it like 15 times. Oh, and especially during like the very end, the final shot.
Yeah, no, and I was too. I was like, wow, no. How did not everyone yell when they were watching this movie?
Hell no.
And then I don't remember exactly. I just remember being kind of dumbfounded by this movie, but by Solaris.
Which one?
The one with George Clooney.
Okay, okay.
Like, I remember watching it and then the end going, what? Huh?
Yeah.
That was stupid.
That's a remake, you know.
Right.
Okay, the original. I mean, I actually think that Soderbergh did as good a job you can. But the original Russian film, Solaris, is a masterpiece. And it's a very, very strange film. And so is Soderbergh's movie.
Right.
But that's one of those movies where it's like, look, I appreciate you trying, Steven Soderbergh, but don't mess.
I don't remember too much about it. I just remember going to remember the end just being like, what did we?
Yeah.
Huh?
It's not, you know, like you see, like I think people were completely dumbfounded by that movie, especially people who you know, thought they were going to see, like, oh, Steven Soderbergh and George Clooney, this is going to be fun. It's science fiction. Who had never heard of the original Russian 3-hour version of
right,
Solaris.
And I hadn't.
Yeah.
So that's I was just sitting there like waiting. Yeah. I'm like, so yeah. When does this start?
Exactly. So, all right. I want to do my favorite ending. My favorite final shot of all time is in my favorite movie. It's Magnolia. Magnolia has my favorite final shot of any movie ever. I like it. I actually even like it better than the final shot of The Searchers. And I know a lot of people that's, you know, because the final shot of The Searchers is one of the classic endings, final shots in one of the most beautiful, majestic final shots in film history. Is just that shot through that doorway of the Duke just walking away. One of the greatest movies ever made. But the ending of Magnolia, and Magnolia is the final shot of Magnolia. And Magnolia is this 3-hour and 10-minute movie about really, really deeply screwed up people. We have some serious issues. Most of them are very, very sad characters. Deeply flawed, very, very sad, borderline tragic characters. And a lot of really heavy and sad stuff happens for 3 hours and 10 minutes in this movie, which is why I love it so much, including inexplicably raw frogs raining from the sky. And by that point in the movie, you totally buy it. Like if you are hook, line, and sinker in the movie, by the time frogs start falling from the sky in Magnolia, you're like, yeah, this can happen. This is a real thing. The soul of the movie, and all the characters are memorable and wonderful, and one of them being my Tom Cruise, who plays one of the most despicable characters ever, Frank T.J. Mackey. Anyway, at the very end of the movie, but like I said, it's filled with all these crazy characters. But the heart and soul of the movie is the character Claudia, played by Melora Walters. She's the heart and soul of the movie. She really is, and she is the most tragic in the movie. Like, she's clearly the most screwed up and the most damaged of any of the characters in the movie. And everybody in the movie is damaged. I think that Philip Seymour Hoffman his character is the only one who's not screwed up. He's the only one, which, you know, it makes it even harder to watch that movie after what happened to Philip Seymour Hoffman. But anyway, this character, Claudia, is just, she hates herself. She has been, sexually abused by her father. She is a coke addict and an alcoholic. She is completely lonely, has the worst, worst self-image that you could possibly have, hates her life, hates herself, is constantly sad. And at the very end of the movie, with all of this tragic stuff that's happened to all these characters, the final shot of the movie is her in bed. And she's sitting on her bed, and the camera is just placed on her, and you hear Save Me, the song Save Me by Amy Mann. That's playing. And John C. Reilly plays he plays a cop who has kind of fallen in love with her and wants to help her. And she won't allow that to happen because she hates herself so much. So at the very end of the movie, you hear the song Save Me by Amy Mann. And you can, muddled in the background, you can hear John C. Reilly, who has walked into her bedroom, Claudia's bedroom. But you don't see him. The camera remains one static shot on Claudia as she's listening to what John C. Reilly is saying. And Save Me is playing. So you've got this beautiful song playing, and you can kind of hear what John C. Reilly is saying to her. And you can see the expression on her face. And it's nothing but sadness the entire movie. And then the final moment of the movie, she looks directly into the camera, smiles, and it cuts to black. And it kills me every time I see it. When Claudia smiles, when she looks into the camera and smiles, the most tragic character in the movie, the saddest person, finally smiles. It destroys me every time I see it. Coupled with the fact that Save Me by Amy Mann is an glorious song. And it doesn't matter what John C. Reilly says. I've tried to, like, listen, and I hear some of it. I've seen this movie a few times, too. That I will crank the volume sometimes, and I have in the past, and put my ear like next to the speaker, and I hear some of what John C. Reilly is saying. And in fact, in the original script, it's all there, and you can read it. I have. But it doesn't matter that you can't hear it. What matters is that she looks directly into the camera, and she smiles. And it's one of the most beautiful moments in film history, in my opinion. So that's my favorite final shot of any movie ever. Claudia smiling at the end of Magnolia. Ridiculously awesome. And it kills me. Like, I'll cry. I just, I've seen Magnolia 17,000 times. And that moment, among many moments in that movie that choke me up, but that moment destroys me every single time. It's so good. All right. We got more. We got a ton of texts coming in. We got some people calling in. We're also going to talk about best, worst endings of all time and ambiguous endings as well. So, yeah. And by the way, if you want to read the article that we have about the endings, it's on our Facebook page, as always, facebook.com/NickDShow. Yeah. Triple Play Thursday, man. Yeah. Triple Play Thursday requests 312-981-7200-224. Requests Local H for its second Triple Play song, and that is Fritz's Corner on WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We were talking about best movie endings, worst movie endings, and most ambiguous movie endings. And I got a few. Speaking of ambiguous, we've got a few here on this list. Watch Mojo put this together. The Wrestler, the very end of The Wrestler. Dan, you've seen The Wrestler, right?
I have, yes.
Yeah. So you don't really know whether he is going to die or not.
Right, if he survives the leap.
If he survives the leap at the very end. I personally think he's dead. That's just me. This is just how screwed up I am. That was my number one movie of 2008, was The Wrestler. My number one movie. You know, it was really weird. In 2008, Diary of the Dead came out. There was George Romero. You want to talk about a great ending, too. A phenomenal final shot. And Diary of the Dead, to me, is Romero's best movie since Dawn, since the original Dawn of the Dead. And I think it is one of the best zombie movies ever made. And it was a movie that was way ahead of its time. In 2008, in the MySpace era, you know, like pre-Twitter, pre-Facebook, when MySpace was the big thing, Romero made a social satire, a very dark, very bleak social satire using his zombies, as he often does. He made Diary of the Dead, and you watch that movie now, and it's exactly what's happening in the world right now in terms of what's going on with social media and news. This movie came out in 2008. It came out 8 years ago, before Twitter, before Facebook, and Romero was ahead of the game. As he was in 68 when he made Night of the Living Dead. As he was in 1978 when he made Dawn of the Dead. You know, I mean, it's an incredible movie and it's got an incredible ending. So that year, that movie came out in February, Diary of the Dead, and I went nuts. And I made the ad for it. My quote made the ad in the paper. I'm actually on the cover of the DVD box, one of my proudest achievements. I have an autographed George Romero autographed copy of my DVD. And I'm on the box, quoted, on the front, next to his signature. One of my prized possessions. So, and one, my quote was, I know it's only February, but I doubt that I'll see a better movie in 2008 than Diary of the Dead. And then, damn it, in December, The Wrestler came out. I was like, damn it! Because that's a bold prediction to make 2 months into the year. And then, you know, I got a screener of The Wrestler. I watched the movie. It's December 2008, and I'm like, oh, man, this is better than Diary of the Dead. So, but I think he's dead at the end. Total Recall's on this list. Now, they're basically saying the whole movie might be a dream, right? Is that what they're saying by the end? Because they're on Mars, and it looked exactly like it looked in his dream. So Total Recall might be an ending. Then there's a question of the ambiguity of The Wizard of Oz. The ending of The Wizard of Oz. Now, I'm one of the few people on the planet that doesn't like The Wizard of Oz. I know. Just don't start whipping stuff at me. I don't like Wizard of Oz. I like Return to Oz and Oz the Great and Powerful, the Sam Raimi movie. I like those, but I don't like The Wizard of Oz. Here's what it says. Dorothy and her dog Toto are whisked away to the magical land of Oz, where they meet a brainless scarecrow, a cowardly lion, and a heartless tin man. Oz is also chock full of witches, fairies, and flying apes, but nothing that goes on in Oz is particularly natural or even explainable. We're left wondering if Dorothy really did travel to Oz, or whether she was concussed by a passing tornado. Okay.
Wait a minute. It was all a dream.
I mean, well, that's what I've always thought at the end she had a dream and put her family and friends as the characters in it.
Right.
So I don't know what's, I mean.
I'm confused.
No, well, I guess they're assuming that some people think that she really did, in fact, go to Oz. Like it really happened.
I see.
So, but I don't.
I don't either. I've never, ever thought
was,
that.
She was a traumatized little girl who had a weird nightmare and populated that nightmare with people from her family. That's what I always thought happened.
Yeah, I never. Yeah, I don't. That's odd. I've never thought to think differently.
Yeah. I know. Shutter Island, which has I live there, by the way, which has a very, very ambiguous and very cool ending. And you don't know whether it's real or not. But the twist that happens in that movie happens pretty close to the end. It doesn't happen right at the very end. Not like one of those big surprise endings. How about The Thing? I just screened The Thing a couple of months ago at my film club. And at the end, you don't know whether Chiles and MacReady, maybe one of them is the thing. Maybe one of them's human. Maybe they're both the thing. Maybe they're both human, and they just freeze to death at the end. Either way, it's not a good ending. It's very ambiguous. It's just these two guys sitting there sharing a bottle of scotch, waiting to freeze to death, or one of them is the thing, is going to eat the other one, or they're both the thing, and it doesn't matter, and everybody's going to die. I am of the opinion that Chiles is the thing. Because there's a moment in the movie where at the very end where they're outside and MacReady, played by Kurt Russell, is sitting there in the snow after they've blown up the entire base. And he's breathing and you can see smoke come out of his mouth. Like when he breathes, you can see the air because when it's cold out, you know, you have the smoke coming out of your mouth. When Chiles walks up and starts talking, no smoke comes out of his mouth. For the entire scene. Nothing. You can't see his breath. He's the thing. All right, we got a break. We got more endings to talk about here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Triple Play Thursday continues. Local H, all the kids are right. 224 area code requested that for Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. All right. Talking about movie endings, the best, the worst, the most ambiguous, a ton of texts have come in. I want to get to those, and we got people on the line, so let's get to that. Biker Don, hey, Don.
Hey, Nick, how are you doing this morning, buddy?
All right.
Mine, I saw Dan, one of the, you know, there's a bunch of them, but the one that sprung immediately to mind when you brought it up was the ending for Easy Rider.
Sure, yeah.
I find it just totally unfulfilling and totally unbelievable. I mean, these guys are doing drugs, you know, before this. Yeah, so you know somebody's got to have a piece on him. Yeah, I can't believe Dennis Hopper doesn't have a gun stashed in that, you know, in that shoulder bag of his.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There's no return fire, nothing. You know, it's like I just found this totally implausible.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's actually on the list of endings because it's it's a shocking ending. It kind of comes out of nowhere. Have you seen Easy Rider?
No.
It's good. It's a little dated.
Yeah, it's on the list.
It's a little dated. I got to say, I don't think it's as timeless as a lot of people think it is.
Yeah.
I think it's very dated. But at the time, it changed things. It was it was an amazing movie. Don, thanks for the call. Here's Howard on WGN. Hey, Howard.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, 2001, Space Odyssey.
Yeah, crazy ending. Crazy ending.
Space AB is supposed to be ambiguous. And sad and happy. pretty interesting that Kubrick would do that.
Yeah.
May never have exceeded that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that whole movie is a bit of a mystery. I mean, the entire film, you're just kind of like, what the hell is going on here?
My first girlfriend summed it up pretty well. She said, well, it's birth, death, and rebirth.
That's exactly what it is.
I said, oh, all right, yep. That's cool.
All right, cool. Thank you, Howard.
Sure. Yep. Thanks a lot, Nick.
Yep, take care. All right, let's fly through some of these texts. Charade with Matthau and Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant's got a great ending. That's true, and that movie was remade. That movie was remade with, I want to say it was Wahlberg, Mark Wahlberg. And I think Jonathan Demme directed it. Jonathan Demme also did a remake of Manchurian Candidate. But I want to say Charade was Marky Marky. And he had I don't think he had his funky bunch.
Yeah, I was going to say, was the funky bunch in there? Mm.
Terrible movie endings. No Country for Old Men, when the movie just when the movie's name is simply restated after the final scene.
I saw that. I don't remember that part.
You don't?
I don't remember them going, No Country for Old Men.
Well, it's in with, have you seen, you've seen it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't like No Country for Old Men. I mean, I'm one of the only people in the world. I think that movie sucks. Best thing in that movie is Josh Brolin. He's phenomenal in it. And I don't even like haircut guy in it. I got the cow thing. What's his name? Javier Bardem.
There you go.
I'm going to stun gun you with my cow thing. And then I'm going to make you flip a coin. And his hair. I think that movie sucks. And the ending is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But it's between Tommy Lee Jones and Barry Corbin. So because it's those two guys, I don't hate the ending as much as I hate the rest of the movie. So, let's see. Galen and Chandler says, my all-time favorite movie ending is The Blues Brothers with Jailhouse Rock leading into the credits. Okay. Nico from Brookfield says, I love the ending to the first Iron Man. Yeah, well, it ends with Sabbath. So, you know, any movie that ends with Sabbath.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Does he fly away or
no,
whatever?
No, he's at a press conference and he says, I'm Iron Man.
Okay.
Mike from Worth says, great ending, great film, bad ending, To Live and Die in L.A. To Live and Die in L.A. is one of the, by the way, that's not the ending. There's still 15 minutes left of that movie when what happens, happens. Have you seen To Live and Die in L.A.?
No.
William Peterson, what was the TV show that was it CSI? Okay, William Peterson was on the original CSI, the Vegas CSI. That's what you're probably best know, but he's a Chicago actor, phenomenal actor, really cool guy, been in a bunch of stuff. To Live and Die in L.A. was his first movie, 1985. He was still living in Chicago at the time, and it was a big break for him. William Friedkin directed it, and he's the lead in the movie, and you're following him through the entire movie. And with 15 minutes left, out of nowhere, someone blows his face off with a shotgun.
Oh, no.
And like, and
that didn't happen back then in movies,
right? No way!
I went to the theater opening for that movie, yeah. Nick, and freaked me out.
I was like, what just happened? Did they blow his face off? And they did. And I was, and Vic, if you've never, you know, if you, and again, that was 1985. They didn't do that kind of stuff in movies then. I interviewed William Friedkin, and Friedkin said that he had to fight for that.
Huh.
Like the studio was like, you can't blow the guy's face off. He's the lead.
How's he going to talk?
Jaw dropping.
So it was unbelievable.
Was that a throwback to that scene when they did? Well, I don't know what the rule is on
what movie. What movie?
Departed.
Oh no. Okay. No. But that was another one.
Yeah.
Good God, man.
No. Both elevators.
Oh my God. Both. Yeah. I mean, it was ridiculous. The
same
Departed
type of feeling.
Oh yeah. My God. Oh, man, when they killed DiCaprio and Departed.
I just had to jump in on that one.
No, Vic. I totally understand. I remember the first time I saw To Live and Die in L.A., and they blew his face off. I was like, well, this is a dream sequence. This is a dream sequence, right? He's going to wake up in bed. And no, he doesn't. He gets his face blown off with a shotgun. Like, out of nowhere, too, because you don't even see. It's not even during a fight. You know, like a big shootout or chase scene or anything. It's like they're having a little confrontation. Suddenly a guy pulls out a shotgun, blows the guy's face off. And I went, wait, what?
And they went, credits run?
No, it goes on for another 10 minutes.
Oh, all right.
Like, because then, like, his partner has to take his place. Mm, okay. And he becomes, like, the corrupt dude at the very end. You know, that's what the movie, what really happens is that he kind of hands the baton, because he's a real a-hole. The character that William Peterson plays is a very corrupt a-hole. And his partner is more idealistic. And at the end of the movie, after William Peterson gets his face blown off, John Pankow, who plays his partner, becomes corrupt. And he takes the mantle from Peterson. Again, another really bitter ending. Like Risky Business, it ends with the corruption of an innocent. That's what happens at the end of Risky Business. It's like, oh, the kid's corrupt. That's fantastic. Ridiculous. Let's see. Angels with Dirty Faces had a great ending. 847. 815, Citizen Kane with Rosebud, of course. Did you know that Rosebud was Roger Ebert's vanity plate?
Oh, really?
Yes, it was.
Oh, fun.
Yes, it was. I believe it was with a Z, because I think maybe...
Oh, okay.
Because Rosebud was taken already? So I believe Roger had a Z.
I'm such a moron. I thought it was Rose. I thought you said with the Z. I'm thinking Rosebuds.
Yeah, that was his rap name. That was Roger's rap name.
Man.
Wild Bill, Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Apes, one of the greatest endings ever. One of the greatest endings in the history of film. When he thinks he's on a different planet, there's the Statue of Liberty. He's been on Earth the whole time. And then he goes nuts. And then Heston goes nuts. You blew it all to hell! Movie rules. Alfredo says, Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry. Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry is an amazing movie. It's a 70s car chase movie.
Okay.
And those are all fantastic. 70s car chase movies are an actual subgenre that exist. And they're awesome. This one stars Peter Fonda and Susan George as Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry. And they're on the run. You know, they're criminals, and everybody's chasing them. Cops are chasing them. Bad guys are chasing them. And it looks like they're going to get away. And they're like, yeah! And they're finally free. And they're flying down the highway. And they're like, yeah! And they literally say, nothing's going to stop us now. They get T-boned by a train.
Oh, no.
That's the end of the movie. Like, what? Again, in the 70s, it's like, what? They get T-boned by a train. Let's see. The ending of Blair Witch Project was the worst in cinema history. No, it wasn't. A complete and utter disappointment. No creativity at all. No thought was put into it. Seems like the writers gave up and couldn't come up with anything substantial. So lame. I hated it. A waste of my time. Okay. I think that the Blair Witch Project, one, is a great movie, a phenomenal movie, a terrifying movie, and one of the best endings ever. You remember the ending of Blair Witch?
They're in the corner.
Well, he's in the corner.
Right, and then the camera, they still got the camera.
But in the movie, they say that the Blair Witch, before the Blair Witch kills you, mm-hmm. makes you stand, the Blair Witch will not allow you to face her.
Yeah.
You have to stand with your face to the corner, in the corner. And it's just described very briefly in the movie. And at the end, when she's running, you know, with the camera and screaming, and she runs into the building, and Josh is in the building, and she runs down, and you see him in just that brief moment where the camera swings around. He's got his face in the corner, and he's standing with his back to it. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. Because then you're like, oh, my God. And then, boom, the camera falls down. Dead. End. That shot of him standing in the corner, I'm not kidding. That's terrifying. I know that it's a very divisive movie. It's a polarizing movie. People who like Blair Witch love it. I'm in that camp. People who don't like Blair Witch hate it. And there's kind of no in between. When that movie came out, I can't tell you the number of arguments I got in with people about it. People who absolutely hate it. How many people were calling my show and go, what is wrong with you? I'm like, scared the hell out of me. And that ending is terrifying. That shot of him standing in the corner. Oh, please. I get the chills just thinking about it.
Okay.
It's awesome. It's awesome. All right, we got to do the weather and the traffic here, and then we got some more endings to talk about here. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN here till 5 o'clock, and we're talking about movie endings, best, worst, most ambiguous, and stuff like that. Blair Witch, man, that's such a divisive movie. People really hate that movie, or they really love it. How about this one? The movie ending that gets me is Field of Dreams. When Kevin Costner says, "Hey, Dad, you want to have a catch?" It just kills me every time. Yep, me too.
Is that one of those man movies that you can cry at?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, seriously, that movie affects guys more than it does women. You know, baseball and your dad, that's a big thing when you're a kid, when you're a boy, you know. And playing catch with your dad's a big thing. So at the end of that movie, every single time he says, "Hey, Dad, you want to have a catch?" I'm not kidding. I start sobbing.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I sit on the couch and sob. I showed that movie last year or two years ago at my film club. And all the guys, you could just hear people, like guys, just sobbing.
Did you end up boxes of tissues?
I had to. Do you know how I talk right after the film?
Yeah.
I got down there and I'm going, you know, I'm talking after the movie and I'm like, you know, it was ridiculous. The Wild Bunch to this day has one of my favorite action-packed endings. 847 area code says, absolutely right. 847 says, "Officer and a Gentleman," when Richard Gere carries off Deborah Winger from the factory. It's beautiful. Beautiful. That's another one of those movies where terrible things happens to people pretty much through the entire movie, including the best friend, like, hanging himself.
Great.
And then he carries her out at the end, and it's beautiful. Two recent ones I thought of the ending. Midnight Special was really cool. Yeah, Midnight Special had a great ending. And The Invitation, wow, what an ending. Yes, The Invitation, by the way, is still playing at the Music Box. You can still see it on pay-per-view. One of the scariest and most tense films of the year. And it's got a phenomenal final shot. Phenomenal. Like, mind-blowing. You should see it. It's one of the best movies of the year. And speaking of intense and violent thrillers, Green Room is opening wide this week. It was at the Music Box and a couple of other theaters. Now it's opening wide.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal movie. And it also has that Prince reference that everybody is applauding to. Blade Runner has two endings. Blade Runner has three endings. And there are four different cuts of Blade Runner. There are four and I have all of them. There are four different cuts of Blade Runner. I have them all. I have the deluxe package. It's like six discs. It came in a big metal cyborg-like case. My ex-wife got it for me. And I love all cuts of Blade Runner. But the actual cut is the ambiguous one at the end, where you don't know whether or not Harrison Ford's character, Rick Deckard, is a replicant or not. I think he's a replicant. And that's why I'm concerned about this Blade Runner 2, this damn Blade Runner 2 movie they're making. What movie are they making the sequel to? What cut? The cut where he might or might not be a replicant, or the cut where he isn't a replicant and it ends with that stupid ending, who knows how long anybody lives? The stupid voiceover with the shots of The Shining. Those are outtakes from The Shining at the end of Blade Runner. They put in outtakes of The Shining, of the mountain driving in the mountains.
It would have been great if they just had cardboard cutout, like animation.
It's like just, like they didn't, yeah. Because, that's pretty funny. Cardboard cutout of Harrison Ford driving.
Yeah. Beep, beep.
Beep, beep. They should have just gone all out and, fully admitted that it was outtakes from The Shining and just cut right to Nicholson driving. Inexplicably, Nicholson's driving, and Shelley
frozen.
Frozen Nicholson. he's a replicant in Shining.
There you go.
Some of the other ones. Let's see. Say Anything has a wonderful ending. You remember the ending of Say Anything?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen Say Anything?
No.
Wow, I thought that would be like right up your alley.
No, it's just a thing of like it just where am I? If you don't rent it,
right?
And then now it's like all Netflix and stuff.
So. Yeah. It's really good. You should see it.
I don't think it's on Netflix.
It's very... No, it is. I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, then I'll have to see it.
Yeah, it might be on Netflix or Hulu. Sure, it's a very popular movie. But it's got a really... I won't give away the ending, but it's got a very wonderful, like really sweet final moment.
Is that the bit with the stereo?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, but the boombox?
Yeah.
No, that's not the end of the movie. That's him trying to win her back. That happens about two-thirds of the way through the film.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Okay.
Empire Strikes Back. Luke, I am your father. Great ending. We got The Searchers. All right, here's one that Dan and I are thrilled ended up on the list. Real Genius. Now, you haven't seen Real Genius, have you?
Wait, which one's?
Val Kilmer. Real Genius.
The parody?
No. That's Top Secret.
Oh, okay.
Real Genius is about a bunch of nerds at the college working on a laser that's going to be used as a weapon that they don't want them to use as a weapon. William Atherton from Ghostbusters is the bad guy in it. It's Val Kilmer, and who else? Who plays Gabe? I can't even remember who plays the kid who plays Gabe. He was never in anything
He wasn't in anything after that.
None of it. There's nobody.
There's the girls.
The guy
eventually became Uncle Rico, the recluse.
Oh, that's right. He became Uncle Rico. That's right. The guy who lived in the closet. And also, like, the jerk with the braces.
Ed Begley Jr.
No, that's not Ed Begley Jr.
It is Ed Begley Jr.
It's not it. I'll bet you.
Oh, boy.
It's the dude from Bachelor Party. It's the bad guy from Bachelor Party. It's not Ed Begley Jr. I'm telling you, it's not. What's his name? What's his character's name? This is Jesus. When they wire his... Kent. Right, Kent. That's right. Kent is not played by Ed Begley Jr., I promise you. I don't know the dude's name, but he's in Bachelor Party, which came out the same year, I think. Or no, the year before. Bachelor Party came out the year before.
Is there some other movie where it's a bunch of smart kids and they're hiding like some sort of liquids?
Well, there's My Science Project.
Might be that.
There's also Weird Science.
No.
And Real Genius. They all came out the same summer. It was like nerd science.
Right. I recall one where there were like students and then they invented some liquid or something that made.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? It's not, you're not talking about flubber, are you?
No.
That's a liquid thing.
I forget. I always, for some reason, Real Genius and whatever that.
It was My Science Project, Weird Science, Real Genius are the ones that we're thinking about. not Manhattan Project. It's not the Manhattan Project, is it?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you the name.
Yeah. Well, you should see Real Genius. But anyway, the ending of Real Genius. What? Who is it?
It is, you're correct, Robert Prescott.
Robert Prescott, and he ended up, he was the bad guy, and he was the jerk in Bachelor Party, too. So. But yeah, the ending of Real Genius is awesome, and anytime you hear Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears, you will never think of anything except for the final scene in Real Genius, which involves turning a guy's house into a giant Jiffy Pop. Like, they filled the house with popcorn, and the laser that they were working on, they aimed the laser coordinates to hit this guy's house so that it, because he hated popcorn. He hated popcorn. He hates popcorn. So that his house explodes like a Jiffy Pop.
Oh, those crazy kids.
It's fantastic. And then the final images of the movie are everybody dancing around in slow motion with popcorn flying through the air while Tears for Fears plays.
Okay.
It's fantastic. I'm telling you, Real Genius rules. Dan and I, we bonded on that movie very early in our meet when we met. So, okay, we got the opening bell coming up here, and here's Steve to tell us what's going on. Hey, Steve.
Has anybody mentioned the end of War Games yet?
Oh, great ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
only option, yeah. the only winning move is not to play.
Is not to play. Yeah. Tic-tac-toe, man.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And then did anybody mention, I tuned in late, I'm sorry, but the end of Thelma and Louise?
No. No mention of Thelma and Louise where they go flying off the off the cliff.
I mean, that sort of started like a thing in lexicon where people, I mean, I've heard people say, let's go do a Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
You know,
which means we're going to kill ourselves.
Sleep with Brad Pitt.
They're going to go rob a bank, pick up a hitchhiker, and go off a cliff.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what we'll be talking about on the opening bell this morning.
Good.
It's all coming up on the opening bell.
Thank you, Steve.
Have a great day.
You too, man. Real quick, the number one on the list is Dr. Strangelove. Fight Club comes in second, which has a phenomenal ending. Chinatown, which was mentioned earlier. Casablanca, Bonnie and Clyde. Boogie Nights, which has one of the greatest final shots ever. Night of the Living Dead. Big Night, beautiful movie. If you've never seen Big Night, it's about these two brothers who run an Italian restaurant.
Okay, yes.
And the final shot after they've had this big fight and had a horrible night, they've had a big fight, is one of the brothers makes eggs for the two of them, and they sit down and they start eating the eggs, and one of the brothers puts his arm around the other, never say a word.
No.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful movie. Beautiful ending. Citizen Kane, we mentioned. The Birds, The Graduate, Before Sunset, The Usual Suspects, uh-oh. He's Kobayashi. Is that what was his name?
Kaiser Sose.
What's Kobayashi?
That's an eater.
The lawyer.
Guy. No, Kobayashi's the guy who eats a lot.
Oh, that's it. It is the guy. Yeah, that's right. All right. Now, Esmeralda, you're off tomorrow. No Fly Jams Friday.
No, I got my own Fly Jams Friday.
Tell everybody what you're
see
seeing.
Charles Bradley. Yeah.
Well, you've heard on a Fly Jams Friday covering Black Sabbath's Changes.
Yeah, so I'm going to go see that.
That's great. All right. Well, then we'll see you on Monday morning.
Yeah, see
have
you
fun.
Monday.
Okay.
Thanks.
So Esmeralda's going to have an entire Fly Jam evening. And we'll be back on Friday with Fly Jams Friday and more. And the opening bell is next.